Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. Get all the leaves on the trees.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you, and it's time to bring in my guy, my man, Dan Stussage from Athena Private Wealth. Floor trader, contributor to Fox, BNN, and everybody else in the world, and the Bubba Show. What's up, Dan Stussage?
How you doing, Todd? You found me. I've been talking to you in a while, other than on the floor.
Well, you've been hiding. You know, the markets are going up, and you're hiding. So, I guess when do we get the Dow 1 million?
Well, the way things are going, and people are talking next week, and it's funny. You know, you talk about. We're back at these levels that we were at the beginning of the year, even higher. And at the beginning of the year, the world was falling apart. So the reality is nobody knows what they're talking about.
Well, that always is the case. And I guess, Dan, you know, you and I have different views on the entire economy and what's going on. And what is your overall take now of what's going on? The jobs number, the construction, the cranes, all the stuff you like to talk about. Give us a summary of what you're thinking.
You know, Todd, it hasn't changed. It's just we're plodding along. We don't have great growth. We have an okay growth job picture. Nothing exciting out there, and there's room for a lot of improvement. But what I do see, and I discounted this in January and February, and everybody was talking about the world ending and the next calamity to fall out. That isn't the case. Let's see what happens and develops over time. Obviously, I hope for something exciting to happen in terms of any of the economic data. And it's just that steady-as-she-goes type mentality, steady-as-she-goes economy that's flying along right now.
Now, last week, you know, we had the ISM numbers, which is one of the things you like to watch, right?
Right.
And they were pretty good, but one of my contentions is we keep comparing them to not very good numbers to begin with. Am I right or wrong?
No. Well, no. Here's why. Because the ISM is an index that, you have student supply management, you have a baseline of 50. I think they call it a diffusion index. And anything above 50 means growth. Anything below 50 means decline. And with the manufacturing, I think we had 2 months of decline. And this past month, it got back into growth. So what the big mistake made with the ISM figures is that, if let's say it goes from 56 to 54, people get excited, oh, it's negative, it went down. Well, it didn't go down. The raw number went down, but what it means is the economy is still, or this index is still expanding, just is not as great a rate.
Well, you know, again, I see absolutely nothing really going on. I mean, again, there's always some positives, and we can find a silver lining if we choose to look for it, but I look at the overall picture. And in my eyes, it does not look very attractive from an overall picture. If I take everything into consideration, the rate of growth, the jobs that we're adding, all those things in, and then where the market is right now, it just doesn't seem that the whole puzzle doesn't fit together in the way I view it. How about you?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Todd. As you said, you know, you talk about you can find a silver lining. I'm looking for a bronze lining at this point. Because if you look at the data, one of the reasons I like the ISM data is because it's a private firm, it's not government data. But when you start comparing that with GDP, things aren't adding up. Something is just out of whack here. I think the recession we went through in the 2008-09 area was just so dramatic that it's kind of at least temporarily rewritten the books on how economies behave. So, as I stated when I first got on here, we have this plodding along economy that's not doing anything great. It's not doing anything terrible. And then when you bring the stock market into it, what I like to look at is not what it's done from the very bottom, but what it's done from the prior peak to where it is now. And if you look at that, we're only talking about 1.5%, 2.5% growth a year from the year 2000, which isn't, you know, typical. Usually you want to see about 7 or 8%. That's what we've seen historically. So, again, it is slow, And the levels we see right now in the stock market, while high relative to 2009, aren't stratospheric.
Now, you know, I know you own, you have some ownership in a construction business, and, you know, how is that business? How are you seeing that business work right now?
You know, it's doing quite well, and here's why. And I thought this all along when I was considering it. Even though things do appear better, people are a little more comfortable in their jobs, they're not comfortable enough to make the plunge into getting a new home. So what they're doing is saying, you know what, I've been in this home a long time. I like it a lot. And if there's somebody my age, it may be their kids are grown, and now they have room to expand, not expand, but change it to a more modern house that they'd like. So they're using the money they have and the confidence they have in the economy to rehab their homes. Kitchen remodels. I'm doing a whole first floor remodel for a woman who has a 19-year-old child who's soon to be out of the house, and she just wants her house updated. It hasn't been changed in 20 years, and she's looking for that to happen. And I'm seeing a lot of that with people wanting just a bit of an upgrade, not willing to commit to the new house.
So now, okay, so that goes back to kind of my theory. People are kind of trapped where they're at because there isn't any real money around, and they're kind of fixing, which is great. I mean, we went through this with cars a number of years ago when people were fixing old cars because they really couldn't buy a new car. So people are fixing their home because they're going to stay there. Because with the lack of liquidity from the banks, there's really no place else to go. So they're going to spend on repair. But, you know, our country is built on new and building new and getting rid of the old. So to me, that acts as a little bit of a problem from that standpoint. And the, you know, we're built on, the United States of America was built on the built-in obsolescence model. You know,
yeah,
it breaks.
Yeah.
You get a new one. You build a new house. So we're seeing a lot of slowing in the new construction and things like that. Is that a problem in your mind, or is that continue to be just something part of what we're doing?
Well, what it is, it's part of that plodding along economy we have, where it can't gain attraction to get out of the, okay, let's get into the new level, as opposed to redo what I already have. So it's not a negative, but it isn't a positive either. I don't know how it cannot be both. It's neutral. But what it's saying is, okay, now this is what I'm going to do. If things get better, maybe at that point they'll say, well, you know what, the person that decides not to remodel now might say, well, now I can afford the new home. But we're not at that point yet, and I'm not quite sure when it's going to come. By all rights, it should have happened within the last 2 or 3 years, and it hasn't. So who knows what's next?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad state of affairs. Just the entire system is kind of, you know, screwed up, and we're not getting the ability to do those kind of things. And I'm sure we will again. Now, just as we come up towards a break here, to your clients, what are you recommending right now? And I don't mean specifically, but are you recommending staying in, holding, buying a little more? What's your take here?
I'm recommending, at this point, I'm recommending staying in. And what I did recommend, it's easy to say after the fact, when the market got hit really hard in the early part of the year, I told people that if you really think that now is the time you want to invest, it'd be an okay time to commit a little bit of money to it, because I think the down move is overdone. So, and then, you know, wait, it's better to buy a stock on the way up than to buy it and watch it completely fall through you. So you try getting it at a lower level, and if it falls off, that may be the case. Now, those values aren't there right now, so there may be one or two. You're going to have to dig deep and dig hard to find them. So whatever positions you have on, you probably should keep at this point.
And we will talk more about that when we come back from the break. We're with Dan Stussage from Athena Private Wealth, also floor trader, contributor to Fox, CNBC, Bloomberg, and all the rest, and The Bubba Show, of course. And make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim. Every day they have swim lessons for you. Join my buddies over there as they take care of you and help you educate on the platform, as well as if we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, we've just passed 200,000 downloads per month. We want to get to 300. I need your help. Make sure you go down and download The Bubba Show every day at libertytalk.fm. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dan Stussage, Athena Private Wealth, as well as a contributor to Fox, CNBC, Bloomberg, and all, and The Bubba Show. So, Dan, you know, we look around and we see some things. And of course, it's your credit. You bought John Deere at the bottom. I remember the day you bought it. And you are a value player, and we are looking for value. And right now, I don't see a lot of value in the overall market. And I don't say that you should short the market nor sell. I mean, I don't think you are either. We're not guys that take a dump, and we're not going to wreak panic here. What we're saying is that right now is probably a good time to observe the market and look for some opportunities, but not a time to be aggressive. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. You and I spoke to that before the break. To find value right now is difficult. It may be out there, but you're going to have to dig for it. But don't be dumping stocks. It's silly right now. Unless something's made some stratospheric rise. And I'm sure there's a few stocks out there that you can probably do that. But in general, if you have a relatively, I don't want to say conservative portfolio, a growth portfolio, stick with what you have right now. And if something should pop up, take a look at it. In particular, a lot of times you have events that really knock a market down for one reason or the other, and it isn't necessarily justified. So when you see something like that, keep an eye on that company for the next 2 days, next 2 weeks, and see what it does, see how it answers the event that they had, and if it's still a solid company, that might be one to look at.
So, Dan, when we're talking, and again, this is one thing that I think that you can bring good light to. I mean, listen, you lived through the crashes a couple of times, and you understand it, and sometimes we're not looking. I think the thing you try to do and what I try to preach is that we're not looking to keep moving around and try to find from A to B to A to B. Oh, I need to be in bonds. No, I need to be a gold. Oh no, I need to be in the stock. We want to have a fairly diverse portfolio that we don't have to do a lot of action on. And the only time that I think that you really should consider selling, if you're investing properly, which is money that you can afford to invest, and you're diversified throughout your portfolio, there isn't a lot of reason to have a lot of movement in your portfolio. It's better just to sometimes sit back, because based on how you designed your portfolio, it accounts for this types of market moves. And you really are looking to compound and accumulate versus looking to always switch from one hot place or what the so-called pundits are saying to do. What do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. First off, you have to remind yourself you're not a trader. Very few people are traders. And of the people that are traders, sure, you are successful, and they're in and out. As far as a buy and hold strategy, it works over time. I mean, I have my in-laws, my own folks, and everybody had bought stocks, and they kept them for a long time through the thick and thin, but in the long run, they did well. The only time you might want to think about selling something is if you get really heavily weighted. Say one stock jumps up a significant amount, and you're really heavily weighted in that one stock, you might take a little off and put it into another equally solid company. But as far as getting in and out, you're right. That's not what you should do as an investor. Remind yourself you're an investor. You have a time frame. It might be 2 years. It might be five. It might be 20. Use that as your judgment call as to when you get in and out of stocks.
No, and I agree with that. Again, I talk about this all the time. I do a big hedging program for the average investor in which I can lock up their portfolio so they never have to sell and they never have to worry about the markets going down, which is what I do for my own personal portfolio, and it works. And I tell you, don't get out of stocks, but I do agree, and this is something that's very important. The only reason you get rid of a stock, there's two reasons. Okay, number one, something fundamentally has changed and it's become a dog. Like, for example, let's look at Sun Edison that went from, about $40, now it's about 58 cents. Okay, you had plenty of time to get out of that, and once you saw that the fundamentals started to change, because when you're investing, you are looking at some, you may be investing on a technical reason, but you're investing in stocks that are fundamentally strong. So once you see that change, that is a time to look and maybe adjust. And the other time, of course, which you stated is, if it becomes too big a part of your portfolio, and the example I use all the time is Larry Page from Google. About 5 or 6 years ago, he sold a big block of his Google stock, and everybody was worried, well, Google's in trouble. He said, no, we're not in trouble. Google is 80% of my net worth, and I think that's too high. And that's the only times you look to move. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. You couldn't have said it better than that. You do have to look for the fundamental shift, and again, if it's too big a part of your portfolio. And what I would suggest, I know the hedging program you're talking about, because you taught me, talk to Todd about this, because this could save you a lot of sleepless nights, especially in the markets we've experienced over the past few years.
Oh, and it does. So Dan, I mean, again, the other big thing, and this is what I see in the market today, Okay. I look at the market in different cycles. You know, everybody's got their own way of looking at it, but I believe right today we're in what I call the greed cycle. You know, a lot of people are investing in the markets heavily right now because there's no place else to go. We've heard the story before. We've got money coming from everywhere. But the biggest problem is that many of the investors are using margin to buy something they don't have the money for that they can't afford if it goes down. And we all know the disaster that that type of trading or investing does. When you're investing, it should only be money that you can put away and forget about for a month, a year, whatever. It should never be money that you need to make the house payment with. And I think that people are getting away from the basic investing model because they're gambling now because they're afraid they're going to miss it and they're trying to chase yield down and they're over-margining. Hence, our margin debt is at record all-time record highs. What do you think?
Absolutely, and again, you get to that investing trading things. If you're buying stuff on margin, you're at the trading red, the trading edge right there. And as you pointed out, when you invest money, invest what you can afford to lose. That sounds like a counterintuitive statement, but the fact is, you have to have money that you're not going to need anytime soon. And if you start gambling on the way, especially, let's say the stock market did all of a sudden take a big dump here, and it could very well happen, and you're margined up. They're calling. They're getting their money back. You're losing yours. So you don't want to take that chance right now.
Yeah, I mean, again, I will say this with 100% mathematical certainty that the market is going to take a big dump one of these days. But that's the point. So if you're investing dollars that you don't need, okay, we don't think we're going to lose it, but we know that it can draw down a little bit, and we know that we've seen in 08, we saw a 50% haircut. Now, it doesn't mean every one of your stocks went down 50%, but some probably went down more. But if you weren't panicked out and you weren't trying to outguess the market and you sat back, then the markets did eventually come back because Dan and I both know that over time, the markets are going to go up somewhere between 8% and 9% year over year. They don't go up every year. But if you're buying fundamentally solid companies at good technical levels, then you should be able to beat the market most of the time. And again, it has to be in monies that you're not risking. And that, I think, is where a lot of people make a mistake. And the second part of that mistake is investors should not be looking to take a quick profit on a stock because they're investing. They bought it for a reason. You don't ever want to turn an investment into a trade, nor do you want to turn a trade into an investment, because typically what that says to me, if you turn a trade into an investment, it means you're losing money and you don't want to get out. And if you turn an investment into a trade, it means you made money, but you probably didn't make what you're going to make if you just sit back and watch it. What do you think?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. Again, it's scary how much we're agreeing on. But the fact
we'll get to it later. Don't worry.
Your example from 08 and 09 is great. Think about if you're an investor in 08 and 09, and even though it hurt to see your portfolio drop like that, if you hung on, you've got it all back and then some. It's not as good as, the 8% that you consistently get over time, but you would have been okay. So the people that decided, oh, no, I'm going to be a trader now, I got to get out, they got out at the wrong time, and a lot of them didn't get back in. As a matter of fact, some of them are starting to get in now. Like you say, you're getting into this margin debt problem because they don't want to miss the boat. So you got to stay tight. And the important thing to remember here is look at your time frame. How old are you? What is your target date for retirement? And plan your investment decisions around that.
And that is, that's why, now Dan and I are going to mix it up as we always do, but I had to give him his props early, I had to kind of set him up for a beatdown later. This is the Bubba Show. I'm hanging out with Dan Stesage, Athena Private Wealth. Again, I urge you to give him a call, 297-299-8877. Athena Private Wealth, he's very bright, very smart about the markets, and he treats it like it's his own money. And I think that's always important because, again, he's looking out for your best interest. You can see him on Fox every Wednesday morning at 8:30 East Central Time, 9:30 Eastern Time. But check him out. And also, check out BubbaTrading.com. You can see some of the programs I'm talking about. We've now offering hedging, a futures, and an options training course, all 5 to 6 week courses, reasonably priced and ready for you, as well as you have to download the show. I'm begging you. I need you. Actually, the show is great, and I need you to download it. We just hit over 200,000. We're looking to go to 3, as well as follow me on Twitter at Bubba Average Joe. Every day I post stuff for the every day, and I do a lot of writing that you'll get to see. But anyways, check out libertytalk.f for the downloads. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back after the break with more from me and Dan Stussage, the Bubba Show.
Let me play among the stars.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Hear that whistle, it's 10 o'clock.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dan the Man Stussage, the big angry redhead. And hey, what is your Twitter handle, by the way, big boy?
At Daniel K. Stussage.
All right. That's hard to. It rhymes with message. That's how I remember his name.
But,
there you go. He is the big angry redhead. You can catch him on Varney every Wednesday at 9:30 Eastern Time. All right, Dan. Now, let's get into the real stuff. The crappy job of the Federal Reserve and the nonsense that they're doing. A, before I get into it with you, what is your personal opinion of the Fed and the job that they're doing?
Well, here's another. I think you and I are going to be in agreement. It's not doing a good job. And if I can start right into it, just the fact, not the previous meeting, the previous meeting when they said all of a sudden, well, you know what, we're not going to raise, we're only going to raise two times this year. How do you put a number on it? You can't put a freaking number on how many times you're going to tighten. What if the market dictated that you had to tighten five times? Or what if it dictated that you had to ease? You can't say things like that. And as far as the job they're doing, given statements like that, that just lessens my confidence, and I think a lot of people's confidence in their abilities to predict what's going to happen.
So we know the Fed has never been right. Okay, on predicting recessions, on predicting anything. We know that the Fed is a professional bubble builder. And if we could buy stock in bubble building, we could all retire on the incompetent moves in which they make on a regular basis. Okay, now, I have a real fundamental problem, and I've been on this all week. Okay, every day I've talked about it so far this week. And it really is, every time I think about it, my blood boils a little bit further. On February 11th, the market made its bottom, or the double bottom. Okay, and what is just coming out, what it came over last weekend, came out, was that on February 11th, Janet Yellen called Mario Draghi and the Bank of England and Jamie Dimon, who JP Morgan owns part of the Federal Reserve, bought back 500,000 shares of his stock. So at the absolute bottom, Yellen was on the call on the phone with the two guys from Europe, and Jamie Dimon bought back his stock. To me, that reeks of something very, very stinky. Okay, I'm not accusing anybody. I'm not saying anything, but to me, that seems kind of hinky that these guys are all benefiting from after those phone calls and at the dead bottom of the market. Any thought?
You can understand they want to talk to each other, especially Draghi and Yellen and the world leaders. But when you bring Jamie Dimon into the mix and he reacts on it, how that isn't a conflict of interest, I don't know. But the fact is, however the rules are written, especially seeing Yellen initiated the call, nothing much will come of it. But it certainly smacks of impropriety, and I'd like to see further investigation on something like that. And again, don't want to say it's right or wrong until we see further proof, but unfortunately, I don't think we'll see that.
We're not accusing, and I'm certainly not putting Dan in that position. I'm a little bit more angry about it than anybody, but I just think that it smells of an insider trading kind of deal, and especially because, again, you know, the Fed is supposed to be a private organization, and one of the owners of that private organization is the J.P. Morgan, and I think it just reeks of something that is fishy. And what bothers me, Dan, is, as you know from being in the business, the biggest thorn in everybody's side who's in this business is compliance and the regulations. Now,
to me, it
sounds quirky that all of a sudden, you know, and listen, Jamie Dimon is a big boy and he's a smart guy. I don't take anything away from his knowledge. However, it just kind of ties in funny that all this happens. But forget about that. We'll move on because I don't want to beat this to the dead horse. But I went into the bank the other day, okay, and I went into, believe it or not, J.P. Morgan. That's my bank, okay? And I've been banking there only for 30 years. I mean, you know, just a couple of days. And they all know me when I walk in. I needed a change for a $100 bill. And they wouldn't give it to me without me giving my account number. And I remember my account number like I remember, you know, I'm lucky I can remember my name, okay? So now, to change a $100 bill, it was like going through security at the police station. Now, what the hell is going on here? I mean, I don't understand it. Can you explain to me what the hell is going on here?
No, now here, this is kind of on that same vein, except they wouldn't change it for me. I went into the local bank. I was going somewhere. I had a $100 bill, and I didn't want to lay that out on somebody. So I just went to a bank. I figured I got a $100 bill. They should be able to tell if it's good. And I asked them to change it. They go, "What's your account?" I said, "I don't have an account here. It's a $100 bill." They go, "Well, we can't change it then." I said, "You got to be kidding me." I mean, no, I agree. That's just absolutely ridiculous. And especially in your situation where they do know you, they see you in there on a regular basis. That should have been done without question. But the times of the local neighborhood bank are gone. And I'm not sure where you were with your, where you are with J.P. Morgan, but I'm a part of LaSalle, not LaSalle. What's the other big one?
It used to be Bank of America.
And you know, the bank I started with was absorbed by this bank. 30 years ago when I went into a bank, they knew me. "Hi, Dan, how are you?" There was no question as to what needed to be done, and they would take care of you. But now everything's a number, everything's a statistic, and there's not much personality in these things anymore. It really is sad.
And, I mean, I guess, and the, all the regulations, you know, Dan, our whole country was built on entrepreneurship. Okay, I mean, even the big companies. I mean, Apple, you know, started in a garage. Okay, but every company depends on getting money from somebody, and of course, the banks refuse to lend to anybody right now. And I believe that down the road, this is going to cause a much bigger problem than we've ever seen before. Because, quite frankly, the banks just aren't making enough money right now. You know, they have nice profits, but they're really not enough for what they do. And I think that's going to cause a problem because they need to get that leverage money out, and they're not getting the leverage on any of their cash up. Do you foresee any problem in the banking system?
I don't necessarily see any right now, but your point about the banks not lending money is another point well taken. And it goes with what we were speaking about earlier, the economy not being able to get out of the rut. Well, 80% of new jobs are created by small business, right? How do you create a small business without having access to capital? So that's holding everything back. And ultimately, if that continues, yes, these banks will have problems because the easy money that's been around might not be there, and then they're going to have to figure out ways of making money. I don't want to
say legitimately. I'll say it. Legitimately.
Okay, I'll let you say it. But how are they going to do it? So, yeah, it can cause a problem down the line. I'm hoping it won't come to that case and that sanity will prevail somewhere along the line. And given what we've seen, that's hard to see right now. So,
well, I mean, one of the things that bothers me as well, Dan, is, you know, our poor farmers. I mean, they're in desperate and dire straits here. They've had a few bad years in a row. And, you know, the banks, they have trouble getting money. You know, they need money to float the crop, you know, to get it planted, get everything taken care of. And they're having trouble getting money because the bankers are getting tougher there because of all the regulation. I mean, I don't know if we see a way out, do we?
Hey, somewhere along the line, you know, whenever, what do they say, the It's always darkest before the storm. And we find a way out. We typically do in this country. We always have, as a matter of fact. We always will. It may get worse before we do see that, but ultimately I think we'll see progress, and I'm not sure what's going to take to do it. What really I think will happen somehow or another, despite all the moves of the Fed and everybody else out there, the economy will gain some traction, not necessarily the 5% and 6% growth you'd like to see out of a recession, but maybe we'll get back into that 3% to 3.5% range. More money will be made for everybody and help us dig ourselves out of these issues we're dealing with now.
You know, it's funny that, you know, we see the same stuff always repeat itself and under the same reasons. I mean, every time we've had a major collapse, it's always because there's too much cheap money floating around, and then they have to reverse course quickly. And I don't think this time will be different. I'm concerned, not for myself, because I'm actually looking forward to a market collapse, but I think that, well, I mean, you know, really what is a market collapse? It's really just another buying opportunity to get back in. And if you're hedged properly, okay, or you're set up properly, then it's really just an opportunity for you to buy more, because I do want to buy more. I like to hold equities. I think that there is nothing better than compounding your portfolio if you can, and you can't always do it. But again, you have to be kind of set up, and that's where a guy like Dan comes in, is they take an overview of your portfolio, and they look at it. Dan, give us, you got about 20 seconds or so. Give us a little bit of Athena Private Wealth and what you're doing.
Okay, you know, the thing is, we spoke about a lot of what we do here, and basically what you want to find out is, what's your financial position today? And you can speak to me, you can speak to many different people, and it often helps to speak to more than one. Just find out where your position is and where you want to be 5, 10, 15 years down the line, and then go to somebody and make a plan to chart that course and stick with the plan. That's the important thing that Todd and I both have stressed. Make sure you stick with it, because over time you'll be rewarded.
And that's it from my guy, an expert in the field. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace with Dan Stesich, Athena Private Wealth, 847-299-8877. Catch him on Varney every Wednesday at 9:30 Eastern Time. This is The Bubba Show. Make sure you go download the podcast every day, libertytalk.fm. Also, go check out bubbatrading.com. That's where we show my articles. That's where we talk about markets. We've got a special segment for farmers, but also we have our programs listed there, and you're welcome to check them out. I encourage you to do so. I think you'll find there's a lot of good things that you can learn and help enhance and grow your own portfolio. In the meantime, we're going to step out for here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace. We'll be right back with Dan Stesich from Athena Private Wealth. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dan Stesich, Athena Private Wealth. So, Dan, you know, there's a lot of talk about currency and all this currency manipulation. And, you know, it's kind of sickening to me, between the IMF, the World Bank, and the Fed, it really how much manipulation they do to try to create in their minds what the actual desired result is. Well, in the meantime, sticking it to the average guy on the street. What's your take?
Well, unfortunately, you know, the Fed and the foreign governments are trying to do what they think is right. But again, we stated this earlier, they don't have a good handle on it. They're reacting to a situation rather than be proactive to something that would be helpful in the future. They think they're being proactive, but the reality is something happened and now they react. And that's just the way it is. How do they get away from that? I don't know. I'd like to see a better way of it being done. And I'll tell you, one thing I really think they should do is they should be a little more tight-lipped about what they say, because they're throwing way too many statements out there that are confusing the heck out of people, and they're doing things based on their assumptions of what will happen, and it oftentimes backfires on them.
So, Dan, you know, we have a, you know, we've obviously in history we've gone from a gold standard to a bimetal standard, back to a gold standard, then to a fiat currency. Do you have any thoughts? Do you like the fiat currency? Do you like the way that the Fed and Congress actually have so much control over dollars in central banks? Or do you think that it's time to maybe make a change?
No, you know, I think not a change. They have to reorganize or reform the way they've been doing things. I think the fiat currency, as you call it, is fine. It's a system that'll work as long as we don't overextend ourselves. And that's the biggest thing they have to work on right now. We're so far overextended in this government, and nobody seems to be addressing that problem. It's going to take the populace to revolt, and unfortunately, they haven't done it yet. And until we do and can get politicians in there that straighten up our balance sheet, we've got a bit of a problem.
You know, I mean, again, there, you know, obviously there's this conspiracy theorists out there who believe that, you know, that they're trying to socialize banking, and that the central banks are all in it together, trying to manipulate and basically, you know, almost wipe out the middle class, letting the rich get richer and creating a socialist nation. Do you put any stock in that conspiracy theory?
No, I don't. I'm not a fan of any conspiracy theory, because the fact is, two people can't keep a secret, let alone all the people you need to have to create a successful conspiracy.
All right, well, and there you have it. So, all right, Dan, so we've got, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, bad things kind of going on. And, of course, that brings us to the last topic of the day. Here we have a presidential election that has a candidate, the favorite, and the betting favorite, I mean, which is, you know, if you go to London and look at their numbers, and they're pretty damn good. Hillary Clinton is a gigantic favorite to become the next president of the United States of America. I don't like her, but that has nothing to do with this question. If you look at our two candidates, you have a candidate one, Hillary Clinton, that could possibly go to jail, could possibly be indicted, has done a lot of bad things over the years, including things that she did at the Board of Trade, which is all documented. I'm not making this up. Okay. And you've got the guy that nobody wants, and his own party is trying to get him out. Does that have any effect on the markets, and does it have any effect on you, and what's your thought process?
As far as on the effect on the markets, at this point, it doesn't. But if it ends up being a Hillary-Trump election, then it will start to have consequences, and I don't think it'll be for the better. Even though the odds are, I think Clinton wins that by a handy margin, neither of those outcomes are good. So as far as affecting me, I try to keep my head above all the external things that can affect my portfolio, at least mentally try to keep my head above it. And I invest accordingly. So again, I'm investing for the long term. I'm not investing for what's going to happen in November.
Do you see rates continue to fall? I mean, I think the 10-year is going to see 1.25 this year. You have any thought on the interest rate market?
My guess is it goes closer to 2%, but I'm basing it on our economy just plodding along. So anything can happen, but I would say 2% first.
Okay, because again, it's, you know, we've got obviously a pretty sad state here. You know, we're not really creating manufacturing jobs. We're not really creating higher paying jobs. We're really just creating a bunch of service sector jobs. And of course, you know, we've got this rampant talk about the minimum wage again. And in my opinion, I'd like to get yours, is when they, if they do increase the minimum wage to the numbers we're talking about, all that's really going to happen is all these companies are going to go to robots, and they're not going to hire anybody anyways. So their payroll actually becomes smaller. They'll have to pay a couple of people beyond staff, but they'll drastically cut staff, and we'll just have a lot more unemployment. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you on that. I mean, people, $15 an hour sounds great, but who's going to pay for it? It's just a wealth transfer. That's all it is. And as far as firms, if you look at what's going on at firms like McDonald's already, they're experimenting with kiosks where you walk in and you put your order in the kiosk, not a person. So this $15 an hour job isn't going to be there. So you have a $0 job, $0 an hour job, or you have, you know, a real relative minimum wage job that you should have as a stepping stone, nothing else. You and I both started working for probably about $1.65 an hour. And, you know, for us, that was great when we got a 15-cent raise. I like the fact. But the 15-cent raise I got, it wasn't because they jacked up the minimum wage. It was because I worked hard and they gave me a reward. You can't count on McDonald's as being the venue to make a living. Now, some people are forced to do that, at least temporarily, but you have to have, again, you have to have an end game and say, how can I make it work so that I can get out of this job and do a little better? And even at McDonald's, the people that start at the line work their way into management. You have to work hard, and you have to prove your ability to your bosses, and that can happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, minimum wage was not designed. Minimum wage was to protect children and women when it was first developed. It was to stay away from slave labor. It was never designed to build your career. Now, look, so many people start at minimum wage and, as you just said, get promoted and move their way up the ranks. But nobody's, I hope nobody's dream is to be working at the counter at McDonald's for the rest of their life. I mean, I would hope that's not anybody's dream. I think that you know, your dream should be to advance and improve your life. And that, I think, is a problem. And that's made this more of an entitlement society. And it bothers me because there's so many people on entitlements, and that does not count Social Security, because Social Security is not an entitlement. We paid for it ourselves. Even though the government counts it as entitlement, it ain't, because you paid for it. But the people that are collecting benefits, I mean, they really control the elections as well, because certainly if the Democrats are paying you basically to stay home, who are you going to vote for?
Absolutely. And, you know, another thing on this minimum wage thing that really isn't talked about a lot and really needs to be brought up. Let's say I'm working minimum wage, and $10, $11 in the state of Illinois right now. And you're a couple levels above me making $15 an hour because you've worked your way up. You've earned that $15 an hour. Tomorrow, the minimum wage goes up to $15, so I'm making as much as you, because I guarantee you they're not raising your rate to $19 an hour. What's going to happen to that employee that was making money because of merit? What's he going to think, and how hard is he going to work to keep going?
He ain't. And that is the problem. Dan Sessage, you and I solved all the problems of the world. Today, this is my friend, my man, the big angry redhead, Dan Sessions, Athena Private Wealth, does Varney every Wednesday, does BNN, does Fox, does everything. He's the man about town, just an overall superstar. But Dan, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it, man.
Happy to be here, Todd. I always like talking to you.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And make sure you go to BubbaTrading.com. As I tell you, I do a lot of fancy sharp tongue writing there for you, so you get a chance to check that out. And we do a grains report every morning for you farmers out there. And also make sure that you go to libertytalk.fm and download the daily podcast. It's always available to you. And again, we're pushing hard to get up to 300,000. We just passed 2, as well as follow me on Twitter at Bubba Average Joe. And the last thing you got to do is go to Facebook and like The Bubba Show. This has been The Bubba Show. We had spent the day with our friend Dan Sessage from Athena Private Wealth. Make sure you have a great day, and we will see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, everybody have a great day. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.